C1S. Number 14B.
So, having seen this, we come to the third subtone soul, where she shows that the conclusion in science frees us from the conclusions of physical sense testimony. Now we get the freedom, the release from the physical sense testimony. Let's go over the line. See, how does science reverse the false testimony of the physical senses? Mind saying, I am mind, all is tributary to me, mind. The body, man, all is tributary to mind. Mind controls. In the subtone of spirit it says, therefore that mind takes no materialistic logic into account, does take no conclusion from matter, from the sense testimony into account at all. And that naturally frees us in soul completely from what the physical sense testimony tells us. It is here that she says that any conclusion, pro or con, deduced from the supposed sensation in matter and so on, is right, is legitimate. So no conclusion pro nor con from the physical sense testimony. No matter what the senses testify, if they say you are well or if they say testify you are sick, I wouldn't take it into account. And I say matter can make no condition for man nor for health. Matter cannot say that I am well. Only divine mind can tell me that I am well, and only tells me that I am well and can never tell the opposite. So that frees me completely from any bondage. And she gives a sense of this freedom, that it really leads us out of disease and frees us from the enslavement, just as it did Columbus when he freed himself from the concepts of the physical senses. Then we come to principle, and she leads the thought a step further and shows that the explanation of science correct the hypothesis of material senses with everlasting facts. And I think what she also wants to give here is a sense that this alone now, as principle, interprets the universe aright, interprets and governs the universe aright. That the moment we have principle coming in, that we get a true interpretation in that which seemed to be indefinite. It says, she speaks here about Copernicus, the astronomer, who after a long time of the false concept of the celestial universe brought in the right concept. Up to that time the Ptolemaic theory was accepted, that the Earth is the center of the universe. Then Copernicus came and turned it the other way around, and as she says, brought order into the stellar universe. It's a nice thing, this tone of soul as principle. If we look up into the sky, we can see the beauty of the sky, we can be impressed of the grandeur, of the harmony of it. But until we see the science of astronomy, we are still looking at it in a wrong way. We cannot interpret really what's going on. You know, we look at up in the sky and see the Milky Way and say, oh, that must be far, far away from us. But astronomical science comes and says, we are part of the Milky Way. We are right in the Milky Way, the whole system of the sun, what you call it, the solar system, is just a little part within the Milky Way. But from the point of view of physical sense testimony, we are outside of it. And so it is with many other aspects. It shows that the contemplation of the universe only through the physical senses may be nice, may be beautiful, but will always be wrong. And only if we put science and its interpretation into this contemplation, that then we get really the harmony of the universe. And so she says, as thus indicated, astronomical order imitates the action of the divine principle. It's on page 121-28. As thus indicated, astronomical order imitates the action of the divine principle. You see, we begin to see now that what the senses testify can be interpreted so correctly through an understanding of the divine principle that the order of the universe comes into view. And the universe, the reflection of God, is thus brought nearer the spiritual fact. Now, the moment we can put principle and its interpretation into soul sense, the whole universe, even if it is only an imitation of the divine principle, is brought nearer to the spiritual fact, and is allied to divine science as displayed in the everlasting government of the universe. Having seen that now from the standpoint of soulless principle, we begin to interpret the universe aright, then the thought just goes a step further to life and says, and that can't be touched anymore by a false testimony of the physical senses. Now comes the eternality of life, the unchangeability of life, that which we have perceived through soul sense and interpreted through principle is now in life untouched by anything. So that we begin to perceive that whatever the physical senses tell us, that this does not reverse the facts of being. That the facts of being can never really be reversed. They stay what they are. They remain what they are. That nothing can change them. That's what is brought out here. That the evidence of the physical senses, that they often seem to reverse the real signs of being. But though they seem to reverse, they can't reverse it. Being can't be reversed. Facts can't be reversed. A truth cannot be reversed. How can 2 and 2 equal 4 be reversed? You can only have a false concept of it, that's all. But when thought then grasps and is trusting the fact that these facts of being cannot be touched by whatever the physical senses testify, then we get the certainty of the everlasting facts of being. She says, life goes on unchanged. Wonderful combination of soul and life. And being is eternal. She makes a further conclusion and say, all right, if that is so in the celestial universe, then it must be so also in the living universe. So that as severance of the jugular vein, you say jugular vein? Jugular vein? Cannot take away life, though the material senses testify to the contrary. The material senses always try to testify that the facts of life can be reversed. Now comes the fact of science, which says, no, the facts of science cannot be reversed, even if the testimony of the physical senses say it can. Life goes on unchanged, and being is eternal. It gives an enormous assurance of this law of reversal at this point. Then she goes on to truth and leads thought on to show that this is really the salvation for the physical sense testimony. I try to epitomize it like this, that Christian Science destroys, see the tone of truth, now destroys the mistaken theory of soul and body and brings to light, to consciousness, the true idea and principle of man. Again, in order to explain that, she takes the symbolism of astronomy and says that astronomical science has really destroyed the false theory of Ptolemy. You say Ptolemy? Yes. That when a new science, or when science has grasped the facts, that that destroys the false concept that one has had up to now. It doesn't go so quickly, really, that destroying. You know that all your life you have been told that the sun stands still and the earth is moving around the sun. But from morning to night you think the other way around. The sun still gets up and in the evening goes down to bed.
Yeah.
Now, it takes hundreds of years sometimes for science to take hold of our human consciousness, of the false testimony of the physical senses. And she goes on saying that just in the same way, Christian Science has corrected the other relationship in regard to the terrestrial bodies, to our bodies. Namely, that greater error that the body rules our soul. That Christian Science has reversed that and brought out the true facts that soul governs the body. And that this is a much bigger proposition, because a false sense of the astronomical order is just an intellectual error. And that usually doesn't affect us very much, because even as long as we had a false concept of the universe was still beautiful and just did go on very nicely and orderly. But not so in regard to a psychological error, as she calls it. Now she calls it a psychical error. Namely, if we have an incorrect sense of the relationship, that's the side mark on 123. She says Ptolemaic and psychical error. But if we have a false concept of the relationship of soul and body, that affects our harmony very tangibly. That doesn't leave us in peace. But that really has its repercussions. But the moment we can correct it through the true sense of relationship of soul and body, that corrects the error which affects our health and our harmony, which affects the harmony of being. And so shows that it brings out the true idea man. No more the psychical and psychological and material sense of man. No more making man, as she says, the most absolutely weak and inharmonious creature in the universe. So this psychical, you say, psychical error, you see, this psychical error really degrades man, whereas the astronomical error didn't touch the harmony of the universe. Therefore, the importance of correcting in consciousness this false relationship. Then she goes on to love at last, subtone, which I tried to summarize, divine signs resolve things into thoughts and replace seeming into being. The marginal heading is seeming and being. And there is an interesting statement, because she says the verity of mind. See, it's all based always on mind as the standpoint from which to go out. Shows conclusively how it is that matter seems to be but is not. It shows conclusively that if we take the standpoint of mind and only see mind as the universe of ideas, that all is mind, therefore that the only three great verities of spirit is the omnipotence and omnipresence, omniaction of God, then we can see that matter cannot be, that it seems to be but is not. Then she says divine signs rising above physical theories, and now this is interesting, excludes matter, resolves things into thoughts and replaces the object of material sense with spiritual ideas. She has a similar statement later on in the chapter on signs of being. And yet, it's different. There, she says, metaphysics, not divine signs. She says, metaphysics resolves things into thoughts and exchanges the objects of sense for the ideas of soul. See, it has a similar rendering, and yet the level is quite different. Here, it is not metaphysics that resolves things into thought. Here it is divine science. Why is it divine science? Because it says it not only rises above physical theories, but it excludes matter. It excludes matter. Therefore, it doesn't exchange from matter to idea. It excludes matter. Whereas later, as I said, she said, metaphysics resolves things into thoughts and exchanges the objects and so on for the ideas of soul. Divine science, you see, is a higher method. It shows, all right, it is above physical theories, but it doesn't make any deduction from matter, nor reverse matter, nor exchange matter, but it first lifts the matter right out of it. See, that's why I found that the second subtone was so important, which showed that in the signs of reversal, matter is not taken into account, that material reasoning has no place in it. It is a much higher, more exalted, a purer sense that comes in when we reason from divine signs. There, it first excludes matter, and that fact resolves things into thought and replaces the object of material sense with spiritual ideas. So again, that it is science which reverses the false testimony of the physical senses. This is how she arrives at being instead of seeming. Let's just run through the subtones again and see just the flow of it, how this signs of reversal works. Signs reverses the testimony of the physical, false testimony of the physical senses. How? As mind, it says, take the standpoint of divine mind and see that everything is tributary to mind. Body, man, universe is tributary to mind. Then spirit comes in and says, and from that point of view of mind, matter plays no part in it. Matter can make no condition. Therefore, it excludes material reasoning. It doesn't ask where you are sick, how you are sick, what is the name of the sickness, how long you are sick, and so on. It excludes matter as that which could testify in any way. Then that gives us the enormous freedom, because no conclusion, either pro or con, deduced from the physical senses are taken into account, and we feel we are roaming in that wide, infinite realm of soul which is without limits, which frees us to let the inspiration of soul flow and flow and flow. But let the inspiration flow as principle, namely as the interpretation of the whole universe, so that the whole universe is seen as a symbol imitating the divine action of principle, so that everything comes nearer, as she says, to the spiritual fact. Then we begin to realize in life that this true interpretation of science can never be touched by the reversal of physical senses, that the physical sense can testify to the contrary as long as it wants. It leaves the facts of being unchanged. And leaving the facts of being unchanged, we come to the realization of the true idea of us, of man. The true idea of man arises, which is no more in any way affected or influenced by the physical senses and making man the most absolutely weak and inharmonious creature on earth. And so in love it concludes and crowns that whole rule of reversion by saying, you see, if you go out from divine science, which excludes matter entirely, that resolves really the objects of sense for the ideas of soul. That resolves seeming into being. And you find that science is the rule of reversion. Yes, perhaps just a little minute or so before I stop, about the epitomes which I have given you. These epitomes are the outcome of pondering, loving the subject. They have been formulated in the best way I felt I could at the present moment. It is no authority for you. On the contrary, I would like you to question them. I would like you to go through the text yourself, prayerfully, question them, challenge them, and see, are they to the point? Do they touch the pith of this whole subject? Then, if you feel you can correct them, do it. But then, I feel the purpose of these epitomes, the value, the use of these epitomes lie in this, that once we have seen the development of the subject through the subtones in the main subject, that then it becomes so crystallized in simple words, in such a simplicity, that one is able to carry that around with one all day, without having to have the epitomes always in the pocket or in front of us and reading it, without having to have the textbook from morning to night in the bag and carrying it with us, but to nurture and culture, yet just the same, the scientific sense of the text, just the same by going over those epitomes within oneself. And only by carrying it around, just here and there, always having an opportunity to say, now, what is this rule of inversion? I'm just going through it and wondering how great it is, adoring it, how great it is, loving it, valuing it. It becomes the spirit of it. Then the letter yields to be the spirit. Then the letter and the spirit are no more two. And little by little, as one does that, it becomes one, one's own natural being. So that more and more, say, if we take this lost subject of soul as an example, more and more it becomes our natural status that we use the law of reversal in a scientific way. Wherever we go, that wherever we go and are confronted with the sense testimony that something within us wells up naturally and says, oh, no, 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 what a wonderful thing it is that all is mind, that everything is tributary to the divine mind. And that divine mind knows the reality of everything without taking any material testimony into consideration. So that divine mind who only knows its own idea is really our freedom that is boundless. And that alone interprets the situation aright and governs the situation aright. And that government of that situation cannot be touched by anything that wants to reverse it. And so establishes the true idea of everything. And that is the being and no more the seeming. This is coming into one in a quite a natural way if one perhaps uses those epitomes as a line, as a guide, which is so simple that each one more or less can carry it around for himself. I usually like to make a suggestion that I say, all right, if we have 8 weeks now to the next talk and we have three subjects which we have taken, mind, spirit, soul, well, take each subject for 2 or 3 weeks and just try to stay in that one subject so that morning, noon and night, that one subject really gets hold of oneself. First we have to get hold of it, that's the study, the approach, and then it gets hold of oneself. And if one can stick to the same gun and not scatter the fire too much, it begins to become subjective to us, natural to us. No more something which we have to remember, but something which becomes me. And that, I think, as far as I look at it, is practical. That's the application of our study. That we apply it by always going over it. And always going over it and loving it and valuing it until we see, oh, what a comforter is this science. All right, we make a break here.